Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Buselli.
Caller analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Buselli.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Buselli.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, it's a rare Wednesday when everybody is in studio. I guess we're all looking at you, Buselli. Nice to have you. You've been so busy lately with the
caravan,
yeah,
rallies, vacation.
Like to have you back. It's nice to see you.
It's good to be back.
So Tony Buselli is here. What do you feel about that, Logs?
About time. It's been like a month.
No, 3 weeks.
How about you, Osh? What you got to say?
I'm bitter.
Because he's got to give up some air.
No, not over that. Just general.
In general. Okay.
Finally. All the talk is over.
Yep.
Thank you.
And so here we go. We've got an hour of this nonsense for you folks. Actually, some really serious stuff to talk about this evening. And you can join us at 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Jaguars This Week presented every Wednesday night by our friends at Aetna. And we are live from Everbank Field. So where do you want to start? Let's start with a letter.
Yeah.
Just to throw it out there.
That's, I guess, the late news, I guess, or the hottest news that's out.
Very general terms, folks. None of us are attorneys in here. None of us have.
I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night, though.
All right. So you can have you, and you. So that means that you understand the lease inside.
I understand it completely.
Evidently, there is. Not evidently. Shad Khan's letter to the mayor is published on Jaguars.com. Jacksonville.com. On Jacksonville.com, and it all goes back to the dispute over who will manage the city's facilities, SMG or this other group that has come into the bidding. And a letter was sent from the general counsel of the city of Jacksonville to the Jaguars claiming default.
And sent to the newspaper at the same time.
Right,
I mean, come on.
Right.
I don't know what's going on with the lease because we don't know the details. I don't know the details, but I just know that there's a way to do business, and one of those ways that's not the way to go about it is to send a letter to a partner, which is the Jaguars, and then at the same time go ahead and send that letter to the newspaper to, you know, that's just...
Well, there's two issues. There's two issues here, and let's keep them separate. One is the issue of the execution of how it was handled, and it was, as Jeff just articulated, an unmitigated disaster of what you want to call a political move or whatever, but sending a default letter to one of your largest partners in the city, the Jacksonville Jaguars, is one thing, but to do it at the same time as you send the same letter before they can even respond and have a discussion about it to the newspaper is idiotic, uncalled for. So that's the one issue. Then there's the other issue of the actual mechanics of the lease and who actually... SMG has been running all the facilities for the city for 20 years, maybe?
91.
Long time. Mayor Brown wanted to put that out for bid, RFP. He did, got two responses. In a very high-level general terms, the way the lease is written, the Jaguars basically get to approve or disapprove whoever is chosen through the RFP process. The Jaguars want SMG. They said that's who they wanted. City wants someone else. That's the dispute. Getting any further than that will take lawyers. If I'm the mayor of this city and my staff wrote that letter, I would be very upset. I would have picked up the phone call and said, Mr. Hashad, here's the issue. This is what we have. How do we come to a resolution and figure it out? That's the right way to handle it with the Jaguars. Now, whether this was Mayor Brown's initiating this or if it was just the general counsel's own reading of the lease and writing the letter, we don't know. I who knows? Only they know. I don't think a general counsel writes a letter and then also sends it to the newspaper, though. It's not working.
I'm looking for it right
you
now.
You know what that is? That's a come on, man moment.
It's a head scratcher, Logs.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so somewhere, the general counsel's letter to the Jaguars, because it's written by a government entity, has to be
It was a public document anyways.
A public document, right.
But let me just say it this way. There's a lot
Pick
of
up the phone.
But there's a lot of public documents that never get found because exactly. Nobody knows they're written.
Right.
And the only reason you get only way any of us
they're usually requested.
You have to be requested. Right. I mean, they don't have to release anything unless it's requested by a newspaper or any of us can request any public document. But if it's not requested, there's a lot of things that get written that just sit in the archives and never go out.
So what I'm suggesting to people is to go to Jacksonville.com and read Shad Khan's letter to Mayor Alvin Brown. And if you're looking for more, you can probably find the general counsel's letter to the Jaguars.
I think it's on Jacksonville.com probably
okay.
Somewhere.
If it isn't, it will be probably pretty quickly because this is a building story here in Jacksonville. The letter back to the mayor was very strongly written, as you would imagine. And Shad Khan lays out all the reasons why.
So my question is, if you're the city of Jacksonville, why would you write a letter saying you're in default of the lease?
Hey, I just got off the phone with Mike Dorwart over at OKV.
All right.
And he said the city and Cindy have just put out a retraction letter. They're working on the story now. I'm going to get one of their guys to come on, and we'll get a
report. So they're retracting, saying, hey, guys, you're really not in default. We just made a mistake.
Well, and if you read, if you read the last paragraph of Mr. Khan's letter to Mayor Alvin Brown, there's no ambiguity about it. I mean,
no,
he's saying we're going to solve this one way or the other. You're going to terminate the lease or you're not.
Or you're going to write a letter apologizing, basically, withdrawing your default agreement.
Well,
I don't understand. Let's say the Jaguars were in default. I don't believe they were. Mr. Khan doesn't believe they were.
Well, clearly the mayor's office doesn't believe they were anymore now.
But let's say they were. Again, why would you, if you were in default, wouldn't you call them and say, guys, listen, we have a problem here. Can we figure this out?
Especially with a new owner who's spending so much time.
I mean, you're really,
to rebuild the franchise.
Shad, you're doing a great job here. Let's figure out, get on some common ground on this lease language.
You make a call. That's just what you did. And it sounds as if they realized they should have made a call.
You think? It's a little too late. That water's under the bridge.
Yeah. Well,
horses out of the barn. Whatever you want to analogy you want to say, it's
no matter how you look at it, the city's lost some leverage on this deal.
I don't know if the city has, an administration has.
Yeah, okay, the administration then. Fine. Yes, Joe.
Gene Wexler on line one, OKV reporter. He's got the story going.
Hey, Gene, thanks for joining us on Jaguars This Week. Tell us what you know.
Yeah, right now we've been hearing that first the city sent a letter to the Jacksonville Jaguars saying that they defaulted on their contract because they wanted to select this company, SMG, to manage the properties, to manage Everbank, and there was something else about managing some entertainment facilities. So basically the city said they were defaulting, violating their agreement on their contract. And you got to forgive me, I'm a little out of breath running around the newsroom here. Shad Khan sent a letter back saying he was surprised and shocked and wondering why the city would do something like this. They haven't done anything like this in 18 years. So he sent a letter back saying, you know, basically the gist of the letter is why, what's going on here. He said maybe it was just the actions of the councilwoman, Ms. Laquadara, who he said maybe it was just her who found this out. So anyway, so then we found out about Shad Khan's letter, and then we tried contacting the mayor about this, and then bam, about a half an hour later, we got emailed two letters. One of them is from Ms. Laquadara herself, and she sent about a short letter, and the main part of it is right here. I'll read it to you. It says...
And just real quick, so everyone knows,
sure.
Cindy Laquadara is the general counsel. She's not a counsel. She's the general counsel. She's the lead attorney for the entire city.
Correct. And the mayor would not be able to fire her or anything. She's elected to the council. So that's who Ms. Laquadara is. She sent a letter saying, I hereby withdraw any notice of default. She said maybe there was a misunderstanding on this matter, what appears to indicate that the two parties simply have a misunderstanding. Also, the mayor sent his own letter, and the gist of it here is where he says, let me be clear, I'm quoting from the mayor's letter, the city of Jacksonville has absolutely no intention whatsoever of terminating its lease with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I have asked Ms. Laquadara to revise her previous correspondence so that there are no misunderstandings about its intentions. So, pretty much they said they were defaulting. Shad sent a letter saying why, what's going on, and the city said back, oh, we're not doing that anymore. So now we're just trying to figure out what's really going on here.
OK.
kind of interesting.
I'll tell you what's going on.
Misunderstanding. Wait a minute. When you write a letter, it's pretty clear usually.
Usually you proof those things.
Yeah, usually here we proofread everything for mistakes.
Gene Wexler, WOKV News. Thanks so much, Gene. We certainly appreciate your contribution to Jaguars This Week this evening.
No problem.
Hey, in an electronic era, this just goes to prove the power of a well-written letter, because it didn't take long for the mayor's office to change its tune.
And it's not just a well-written letter. It's the influence and the power of the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars in this institution and what it means to the city. Especially when it's an error.
It's what should be a pretty minor issue.
It's not even an issue. I mean, listen.
On the surface, it seems like it should be a minor issue.
Cindy Lacadera is the, and I know Cindy, she's the general counsel. She's the lead attorney for the city. She's appointed by the mayor, approved by the council.
All right. There you go. So now, when we come back, we're going to talk football. But if you want to read the letters, I'm sure they will all be on Jacksonville.com. Mr. Kahn's letter to Mr. Brown is up there right now. We break, and then more after this.
Well, season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. If you need more info on joining the Refer a Fan program, just call the Jaguars Ticket Office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com.
Oh, it's just a dream come true. Just one less thing I have to worry about now. I can really just focus on football. Words can't even explain. You know, all I did afterwards was call my mom, and we just talked for a while.
Defensive end, rookie from Clemson, Andre Branch, on the signing of his first NFL contract. One in the books. It doesn't seem like it's much of a story, you know, this year, and probably won't be for some time. With the new CBA, all these picks will be signed, you know, relatively early. Maybe a couple guys will go all the way up to camp. But the importance of getting him done and moving forward without any other distractions, because he's a guy, Logs, that I know you think has talent, but has a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't want to say a long way to go, but I mean, there's going to be an adjustment period. Today, I actually went and watched, I think, about 7 or 8 games of his when he was at Clemson. And Clemson plays a different defense. He does a lot of standing up, two-point stance type of stuff. And so I don't want to say it's going to be an adjustment period, because he'd had his hand down plenty at Clemson, but clearly when he was at Clemson, he was much more effective with his hand down on the ground and getting up the field instead of a two-point stance. And they kind of, you know, in college football, they play so much of that option that defenses aren't being, you know, up the field, rushing the passer type of stuff. And so, but when he had his hand down on the ground, he could bring it now.
And he's a Virginia boy, so he's got to be good, right?
Is he a Virginia boy?
He's from Richmond.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Good.
Well, there's just another positive.
What the heck's he doing going to Clemson?
And again, it just sort of speaks to what we've talked about a few times in the show. People always wonder why it's an adjustment from the NFL, you know, from the college to the NFL. They say, aren't these guys taught mechanics? Aren't they taught things? In a lot of ways, especially now, it is a significantly different sport, college to pro, and you've got to be able to project, and you have to be able to figure out if a guy can play.
Well, yeah. Even the bigger thing is for defensive linemen, especially a pass rushing defensive end, most of the really good ones that get drafted high are great athletes. And so most of the time in the college game, they can beat the offensive tackle because they're just that much better. On pure athleticism, they can put their hand down and go and beat them. All of a sudden, that great athlete gets up to the NFL, and 90% of the tackles, you can be as good as athlete as you want. If you can't work your hands and have some technique and set up rushes and have pass rush, you're not going to get a sniff. And so all of a sudden, they have to learn a part of a game they never had to in college. They have to learn the art of pass rushing, so it can take some more time.
Is he a great athlete?
I think he's very athletic. The thing that impressed me most about him watching this Clemson tape was just his motor. I mean, he goes and goes and goes. And at Clemson, they've got some talent up front. I mean, there's a number 98 and a 97 that are also pretty good. 94 wasn't bad either. I don't know their names. You know, I'm just watching tape. But they had a very, very talented front. He's athletic. He's got a good motor. He's got good speed. I wouldn't put him in the Tony Brackens type of athlete, but how many athletes have we ever seen that have looked like Tony Brackens? I've never seen one.
Forget looking like. How about moving and the agility and the strength and the speed combination?
Yeah, Tony Brackens was an absolute freak athletically. I mean, those types come along, you know, once every couple decades for a franchise.
Yeah.
So, but he's still he's very athletic, and, you know, and he's got all the other tools. And, you know, the thing that impresses me the most watching him in OTAs is that he works hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he works hard, and he takes hard coaching, which he's going
to
get
Joe's
from defensive
today,
line coach Joe Cullen. And he loves it. He eats it up, and he works hard every day. And that impresses me.
How about Terrence Knighton?
It's funny with Andre. You can see what Jeff is talking about even to the naked eye, and you can see other guys who don't respond to it as well. It, you know, not that they respond to it poorly, but Andre does seem to thrive on it, always first in line. You know, seems eager for it. And after a while, even in OTA, it's hard to fake that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a good company. You look at that group, I mean, obviously Tyson Alualu, when he gets back and when he's been out there in the past, I mean, he works hard. Jeremy Mincy, 100 miles an hour, front of the line, you know, and I love Andre Branch. He's right up there with him, you know, so it's good to see.
Walked onto the field this morning. Terrence Knighton talked all the way around, right, just chattering, little this, little that, what's up. Came over, I was talking to Culpepper, and he came over and piped in and said, you guys believe that I was a wide receiver in high school? I mean,
it's amazing.
So, yeah, no, it is. But what I realized is that he is such a strong presence, not just on the field, but in the locker room for the kind of guy that he is.
He really is.
I mean, I always kind of heard it, and I always kind of saw it, but not like this. You realize how important he is to the heart of that defense.
Well, I think he's really got an appreciation, too. It's the cliche, when you go through adversity, you come back with more appreciation for it. He's talked about it a little bit, and he's starting to look like a guy who's going to be turned around in whatever ways he needed to be turned around by what's happened to him.
Well, and I guess what Richard Collier came and spoke to the team last week, and he obviously had some comments about that.
Yeah,
that,
Terrence said, hey, you know, it was, and Terrence said very matter-of-factly, he said, hey, it could have easily, I was lucky not to be in his situation.
And you write an article about that at Jaguars.com?
I did.
Jaguars.com. Yeah, that's what I thought.
And, you know, Terrence is an enjoyable guy to write about right now because he seems to be recovering quickly. Things seem to be going well for him. And as I've often said, he's an easy guy to root for because he caught some heat for being in the situation he was in. But I think everybody in the room knows him. He's a solid guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to get better as a person, as a player from it.
Just along the lines of hard coaching by Joe Cullen, I didn't hear C.J. Mosley today. C.J. Mosley gets the quote of the day. You remember it verbatim or want me to read it?
Brian's got it up on the screen. It's he was basically asked about being yelled at by Joe Cullen. And C.J.'s not a guy who comes in and talks to the media all the time. And his quote was basically,
read it verbatim. Here it is. Here's his quote being asked about being coached hard by Joe Cullen and yelling the way he yells. He says, quote, it's a freaking headache. I'm just going to be honest. It's a headache. You got a lot going on. Him yelling, whistles, the heat. It really doesn't matter what he's yelling about. But as soon as he yells, it's like, oh, my God. He's a great coach, and he gets us in gear. From what I've been told, if somebody doesn't yell at you, he doesn't care. He yells at everybody, so hopefully he likes us all. That's great.
And we will end the first half hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on that note. Joe.
Yes, Brian, this portion of Jaguars This Week brought to you by Football Fanatics. We'll pay some bills, take a look at news, traffic, and weather, then more of Jaguars This Week right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. You want to talk with Brian, John, Tony, Jeff, 355-NFL-1, outside the Jacksonville area. Just put a 1-800 in front of that. Loggy, you've got some well-deserved accolades to hand out?
I do, and last week when you two were gone, me and John handled the show, and I gave out my Coach of the Week to Sylvester Kroom. He had a really unique drill that he had. It was a fumble drill. They had like a rope tied to a ball, and they tried to pull it out of the running back's hands. Well, this week, my Coach of the Week is Jaguars linebackers coach Mark Duffner, because last night the Medicine and Miracles event was held at Ruth Chris Steakhouse in downtown Jacksonville, and it's an event that raises money for the Children's Miracle Network, which goes to our local hospital to benefit the kids. And Duffner hosted the event. Head coach Mike Malarkey was there, general manager Gene Smith, the defensive coordinator. There's a lot of coaches were there, a lot of players were there, and I don't know the exact dollar amount that it raises for our local hospitals, but I know that in past years it's raised, you know, in the neighborhood of $40,000-$50,000, and that all stays right here in our community. And they sell tables out, and they're actually celebrity waiters, you know, the Poslesnys and Mel Tuckers and Rasheen Mathis. I mean, a lot of guys were there, and I wasn't able to get there for the whole night. I got there real late because my son had a little graduation thing kind of going on last night for school, and I got there a little late. But, man, it was good to see. And kudos to Mark Duffner and all the Jaguars coaches and players that participated in this event, which helps our community out in many ways.
Great. You think we're going to have coaches now coming in here lobbying on a weekly basis for your Coach of the Week honor?
I doubt it.
As long as they bring food.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I hey, can be bribed. Yeah.
You heard it right there, folks.
Food
with
will
what?
Do it.
With what? Who knows? Hey, back real quick to the top of the show. We were talking about the city of Jacksonville sending the default letter to the Jaguars. Here's why you didn't want to do it through the media. ProFootballTalk.com. Khan accuses Jacksonville of violating lease, comma, seeks swift resolution of
and see, they got that wrong.
Claim.
See, Shad Khan did not say that the city was in violation of the lease.
Right.
It's not the language that he used, and that was the problem with the city doing
right.
what it did, and that all of a sudden now you start to put the Jaguars back into this conversation of, oh, are they going to stay or are they going to go?
Right. And they hadn't been involved in that conversation.
And they got it wrong.
Right.
You know, I mean, get it right first off, and
but
it shouldn't have been there to begin
with.
But
when you put that out there like that, it's going to be gotten wrong because the conversation is always going to be DEFCON 4. I mean, it's always going to be this means moving, this means X, this means, you know, because that's what Pro Football Talk and other websites' job is to do, is to jump to that conclusion. But in this case, they were given a reason to.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Baselli, when are you going to Savannah? Got a caller from up there. The caravan starts Friday.
The caravan starts Friday. And thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. It's the first ever caravan across southeast, northeast Florida, southeast Georgia. And we're kicking off this Friday, June 1st, from 6 to 8 p.m., downtown Brunswick on the corner of Newcastle and Gloucester Streets.
Gloucester,
thank
yeah,
you.
That's how
sorry.
The Bostonians would pronounce it.
Sorry,
New Englanders.
However
yeah.
you want to pronounce it. I'll be there with Jeremy Mincy, Brad Meester, Tyson Alualu, Lauren Robinson, and Terrence Knighton. Pot Roast will be there. It'll be a good time. And cheerleaders, Jackson DeVille.
Tony Baselli.
I said I'll be there.
Okay.
Yep, thank you very
you
much.
Do a little soft shoe number of what's your...
I'm basically kind of an MC, holding it all together, talking big picture stuff, autographs, all that kind of good stuff. Then on Monday, June 4th, we'll be at Palm Coast. That'll be me. A lot of the same guys, Terrence, Tyson, Derek Cox will join us, Andre Branch, the new signee.
Newly signed Jaguars draft pick.
Brandon Marshall and Jarris Pendleton will be there as well. Same old thing. That's going to be at the Winn-Dixie on 111 Flagler Plaza Drive, 6 to 8 p.m. Monday night, June 4th. Then every day, and then we go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, to answer your Savannah question, we'll be Thursday, June 7th in Savannah, Georgia, at the Charles H. Morris Center, same time. Blaine Gabbert, Brad Meester, Grace Jones, Zach Miller, and myself. It'll be a great time.
All right, we've got Chad up in Savannah. Chad, are you committing to being there next Thursday?
I will be there next Thursday. Yes, I will.
Bring some friends,
looking
Chad.
Forward to it.
Bring some friends.
Say what?
Bring
say
some
what?
Friends with you.
Is this Mr. Tony Baselli?
It is.
Oh, okay. My mother, actually, she's standing in front of me dancing right now with her Gustafson jersey, number 71. She got it signed from you last
yeah,
week.
I met her. I met your mother last
you
week.
You know you're getting old when yeah, the
mean,
moms have worn your jersey.
She, knows.
She was
she
at,
got really excited about that.
Yeah, she was at the rally at St. John's County. At the
yes.
We had, I'm guessing, between 400 and 500 people there. It was great. At the World Golf Center.
Yeah, she was down there for her birthday, visiting family, and
she came
she
out.
Did,
I saw the I saw the 71 jersey out there. I'm the most beautiful woman in the whole entire place, and I was proud to have her.
Such a sucker.
I just made her night. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. My question to you guys, and it's more of I want to get your thought on this. I've been recently. I follow the Twitter, and you know, I follow a lot of Jaguar Insides and ESPN. And I've read on a couple different websites that they're thinking that Maurice Jones-Drew has lost a step. And I don't understand why people think he's lost a step when he just led the league in rushing last year. Now, I understand that, you know, his explosive plays are not quite, you know, frequent as they had been because teams are loading up the box against him. But how do you – what do you guys think about that?
Well, first of all –
he's lost a step or
– Well, just let's set it up because Maurice said at the end of the year that he was going to get back to the track so that he could become the breakaway guy that he had always been. So he even said that last year – he played without the explosiveness in his step. Now, he did have the knee surgery, and he played the whole season on the leg that he had surgically repaired and led the league in rushing, which I think a lot of people were surprised at. But at the end of the year, Maurice himself said, I'm going back to the track.
Yeah, if he's lost his step, it looks good, pretty good to me. You know, last year was obvious. He didn't have the breakaway speed that he had earlier, whether that was age or the knee. He was pretty committed to coming back a little bit quicker, a little bit faster, getting that top-end speed. His quickness isn't gone at all,
which is
the most important thing for a running back.
You got to remember one thing, too. I mean, was he, you know, the elite breakaway guy last year that he was in the past? No. But when he came back into camp last year, he was working his way back just to get to where he was running.
From a more significant injury than I think most people realize.
Yeah, I mean,
and with the lockout.
He had a microfracture. Yeah. You know, so this year, hopefully that comes back.
Well, in his sixth year, it's natural he would be a different kind of back than when he was sharing time with Fred Taylor as a rookie. I mean, I don't know that he was as fast as he was as a rookie. You guys saw him much more than I did early in his career, but he was certainly effective.
If he got in the open in the first couple of years, he was gone.
Right.
300,
and he clearly wasn't that last year.
343 carries last year.
That doesn't include
rushes.
The catches.
Right. 343.
I think he had 50 catches.
43. So he had 386 touches. By the way, 343 rushing attempts is the second most to Fred Taylor's 353. So, I mean, he was right there behind Fred. Second, coming off the knee surgery, second most rushing attempts in a season, and he didn't have his backup in Rashad Jennings last year. So did he lose a step? I don't know whether he lost it, but he didn't have it, and that's by his own admission.
I'm looking forward to seeing him in camp. The mandatory mini camp.
Is he going to show up?
I say June 12th, 13th, 14th?
Yes, that's what you said.
Will he be here?
Yeah, he'll be here. I mean, I haven't talked to Maurice. I don't know, but I'm expecting
him. I don't
to be
either.
Here.
I hope he's there. Hey, let me finish where we're going to be at the rest of the caravan real quick. Thanks, Chad. Look forward to seeing you, and tell your mom thanks for wearing that jersey. Tuesday, June 5th, we'll be in Volusia County, Port Orange City Amphitheater. Beautiful place right there. Fred Taylor will be there, Rasheem Mathis.
Cool.
Myself, Marlon McCree, and Ryan Davis. Wednesday, June 6th, we'll be in the Gainesville area, Tioga. Am I pronouncing that right? T-I-O-G-O?
Sure. Why not?
Florida.
Yeah, sure.
At the Tiago's Town Center. All these are from 6 to 8, by the way. That's Wednesday. Mike Malarkey will be there. A couple of Gators will be there. Mike Malarkey, Fred Taylor, Jeremy Missy, and then Paul Spicer, Greg Jones. Hope Greg gets a welcome. Hope they let him into Gainesville, the old Seminole. I'll
when
be
they
there.
See him coming, you just say, hey, Mr. Jones, nice to have you.
Absolutely. I'll be there. Savannah, I talked about on Thursday. Friday, June 8th from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll be at Waycross up in Georgia at Memorial Stadium.
What's the name of the barbecue place up there, Loggy?
Hog and Bones.
Hog and Bones.
I'll be at Hog and Bones at some point during the day.
Get the signature sauce on your barbecue.
You've already told me. It's written down. I will be there. So all you Hog and Bones people, please get a big plate of barbecue. Whatever is best, just put it on a plate and give me a lot of sauce. Justin Blackman and Andre Branch, the top two picks, will be there. Jarris Pendleton and Brian Anger, our third-round pick, I'll be there as well. And then Valdosta, Georgia, on Saturday, June 9th, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Valdosta Mall. Tyson Alualu, Derek Cox, Brandon Marshall, Jarris Pendleton, and Brian Anger.
And that's a pretty impressive list of names for a caravan. I mean, I was with the Colts a long time. They did a few things like this. Never had this sort of name. So this is a high-profile event.
We're going to travel over 1,200 miles, and we plan on having over 5,000 fans. It'll be a lot of fun.
How many calories?
It depends. Hog and Bones.
There's a variable in there.
Well, Hog and Bones might put me over the top.
A bunch.
He's trying to lay that one out. All right, we'll take a break, folks. Come back. More questions and comments. But 12 more minutes of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. When we return...
It's great. The faster you play in practice, the easier the games are, and that's kind of our philosophy. You make practice hard, so you go out and the game's simple. We speed things up, have a lot of things going on. It makes people think faster, think more. And it's all for a purpose to make the games easier. The practices are different because we have a new coaching staff, but being in the league the last year, Things are easier because you've been there and played in games, so you know how to come out to practice and execute on a daily basis. But this year, you just have a different mindset. This team's got a different feel, a different level of energy, so it's been a blast going out there, working, just having fun.
And it's pretty clear watching Blaine Gabbert that he is having fun and that it is completely different than it was a year ago. For more on Gabbert, practice today, check out Jaguars.com. And certain of his role, the headline of John Osher's story.
Well, it's different because he's in a stable situation for the first, I mean,
completely
look what he did last.
I think stable is the key word he used there.
Yeah, it's stable. I mean, he came into a situation where
last year was preposterous.
Out of a spread offense, no off-season program, to a staff that has a, I don't want to talk bad about anyone, but a wide receiver coach hired to coach quarterbacks who doesn't really have a pedigree doing that, to a system where basically a bunch of lame duck coaches on one-year contracts with a head coach that I think you would have been gone a long way to find one person in the building who is an advocate for. Them being fired midseason.
Team sold.
Team sold. No real, not a very strong receiving group.
Unstable. It was,
I mean, it was a disaster situation. I'm trying to think of what else you could set up as an obstacle for a young quarterback. It'd been fine if you're a young offensive lineman or defensive player or whatever, but the quarterback, I don't want to say needs to be coddled, but it's a position that needs to be held, treated with, you know, kid gloves.
You almost
early.
Have to try to have a situation like that.
A proper way to put it is it needs to be developed.
Yes,
you don't need to treat them.
I
mean, that's the hardest position to play in all of professional
sports. And I wasn't saying
sports.
That disparaging to Blaine Gabbert or any other quarterback. It's just you have to ease them in. It's just such a hard transition.
And you had a coaching staff that knew they were there for 1 year.
And you know what, guys? I mean, Brian, you saw it today. Blaine Gabbert's feet are getting better.
Very obvious.
The receiving core, there were a couple balls thrown today. And you know, I talked to last week's show about talking about Justin Blackmon's college tape. And
well, I look forward to you breaking that down for us.
And we'll get to that more.
Like in the next.
But the one thing that I will say about watching Justin's film at Oklahoma State is that there's a lot of receivers that if the ball's delivered somewhere on the street, they're going to catch it. You know what I mean? Around that address. With him, if it's in the zip code, he gets it. And there's nothing better for a young quarterback than to have a wide receiver that you have the confidence to throw it, and then you know he's going to get it. And it's the same thing with LaRon Robinson. LaRon Robinson made some catches today where you just go, nice, you know, contested catches. And that's what you want. And that's what you want for a young quarterback. When he has that performance on the other end of his throws, it develops his confidence, and it's going to help his development as well.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. You have thoughts on Blaine having talked to him after practice today?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it in the editorial today for the website. He's just sort of what Jeff alluded to. He's a different guy walking around here than he was 6 months ago. And, you know, I think he contributed, you know, to having been here before, to having an off season. He's now got a few weeks into this off season program, and I think he's looking around going, okay, I see what's going on now. This can work. This quarterback's coach is going to be here for me. This coordinator is saying the same thing as the receiver's coach. I'm going out on the field, and what they're showing me in film is what I'm seeing on the field. And the technique things, after a couple of weeks, are working. You can just see a guy who's more confident in what he's doing.
Let's call it as it is, too. He has three coaches who actually know how to coach a quarterback. You got your head coach. That's what he does.
Yep.
That's what he did in Atlanta. That's what he did in Pittsburgh. That's what he knows offense. You got Bob Krakowski. I mean, the guy coaches quarterbacks. He's been around it. He developed Matt Ryan. You got Greg Olsen. I mean, he took a young guy in Tampa.
Josh Freeman.
I mean, this is a group of coaches that Blaine Gabbert can look at and say, I'm going to be taught correctly.
You know,
I can, as a player, there's a lot of confidence when the guy telling you something, you believe in what he's saying. There's nothing worse, and I've had it before, not in the pros, but I remember in a certain situation, I had a guy that I wasn't sure what he was saying was the right thing. It makes it hard.
And you can imagine if you're a quarterback and hearing all the time how terrible you are, and you combine that, it can shake you up. And one of the things I wrote was that he does not look like a guy who is broken from last year. You know, and well, that doesn't mean he's going to be great, but it means he's got a chance because that could have broken a lot of guys.
It means he has an internal fortitude that's pretty impressive.
Right. You remember that question I asked him when he came on
the TV show,
Jaguars All Access.
Yep.
And
this
one right there. And go ahead.
Well, I don't remember your question word for word, so you might want to repeat it. What I was going to say was is that he came and sat down, and Loggy and I did the interview with him, and broke it. He was fine. He knew what he had.
Well, and I asked him. I said, you know, are you going to be tough enough? And I wasn't talking about physically tough.
Right.
My question was directed about being mentally tough enough, because that's what it takes to play quarterback in the National Football League. You have to be mentally tough. And he is mentally tough. We know he's physically tough because he played a little banged up last year. Houston game when Cushing hit him, he just jumped right up and jumped in his face, and you know, his ribs were hurt, and he goes to the sideline and
wrap him
tape
up.
An aspirin to it, and let's go. You know, you like that.
One quick thought. You came in after the first veteran mini camp, the Wednesday of that, and you talked about the coaching and how noticeable the coaching was. Today you had Bob Berkowski, Greg Olson, and Ron Prince all working together with the quarterbacks and the centers. And I don't know if I have seen that kind of intense coaching by three coaches for six players ever.
Beautiful thing, isn't it?
It was amazing.
It's a beautiful thing. You know, and when guys get to the pros, that doesn't mean that the coaching ends. It doesn't mean they've arrived and they don't, you know, they just need guys to direct them through the drill and get them in shape. No. Coaching never ends because the pro game is so much more complex and different than the college game. Coaching matters.
Well, if their time is limited, they are certainly making the most of it based on what I saw today. Absolutely.
It's encouraging.
Good luck next week.
Look forward to it.
Maybe give us
a
call.
I won't be here. I'll call you from – where will we be for Wednesday?
You're not here again?
No, I'll be in I'll be in Gainesville.
Do they have a Hawk and Bones in Gainesville? Have a good night, everybody.
WOKV 8.